Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women. So I'm excited to announce that Women of Wisdom received the most votes for the grant at that Community Forums Network that I've been talking about for the past couple of months. The deadline was just this past Sunday. Over 300 people filled out the education survey for Washington State, giving our state legislature valuable input on how we should be spending our dollars towards a better education system, which also helped Women of Wisdom. We received a $2,500 grant. So very excited, and thank you for everyone who filled out the survey for Women of Wisdom. Now I'm just back from my vacation in Mexico and just coming to Seattle. The spring is great in Seattle, and the sun's out right now, but the flowers are just beautiful. And this week we had our spring Women of Wisdom dinner where we planted seeds for change, making our intentions clear of what we want to bring into our lives this year. Well, today my guest will share how someone brought about a change in laws that has impacted and will continue to impact many people. Sherry Blackman, the author of Call to Witness, is an internationally published writer, award-winning poet, and journalist whose work has taken her to 30 countries and has appeared in dozens of national and international publications, including the Christian Science Monitor, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Star Ledger, and the World in I magazine. In 2007, she was ordained by the Presbyterian Church USA, and today she is the Director of Spiritual Life at Bloomfield College, pastor of two churches, and a truck stop chaplain, which we'll hear about later. Then her book, Call to Witness, just came out this week. It's a true story about a courageous woman, Jane Gagliardo, who challenged Big Pharma in 2002 in a landmark case that forever changed how corporations treat employees with disabilities when she fought her wrongful dismissal due to the challenge of living with multiple cirrhosis. So welcome, Sherry, to Voices of Women.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, first I want to find out about you, what your calling in life is. Obviously, it's about being an author, I assume, and a chaplain. And so how did you come to this work for yourself?
The work of the book is, really a culmination of a whole career with a passion for writing and for telling stories that, have changed the world and changed me. Every story I ever wrote changed me and hopefully went out and sent out some good transformative energy in the world. So I was in the middle of seminary when a friend of mine said, I think you're the right person to write Jane's story. And that is basically how it started. So I went from a career in writing to a career in ministry, and I was hoping to meld both, which I have been able to do. It takes a lot longer, however, when you're serving two churches and a college and a truck stop. So it has taken me a long time for the book to finally get finished and published, but here we are, and I'm very excited about it, of course, and hope that it really will inspire and empower anyone who reads the story.
Yeah, well, stories are important. It's an important part of Women of Wisdom. We have a conference every year, and it's a place where women tell their stories, and with that is a lot of healing. So her story is her own healing journey in a way, and in sharing that story, it helps other people, particularly women, for her story, anybody who has a disability feels that discrimination or feels that they've been unfairly treated. Well, tell us about Jane's story. What brought her up to this landmark case and even her background, you know, where she grew up. Just give us a little.
I'll give you a quick synopsis.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jane grew up or was born in Warren, Ohio, and lived in the projects. She eventually, her family moved, and but basically was in Ohio. She later moved to Pennsylvania, but she grew up in a household where much about domestic abuse. Her father was violent toward her mother and also threatened the children, put her mother in intensive care three times. When the police were called, if they were called, it was more like separate mom and dad and send them on their own ways and off, you know, we go to repeat the pattern. So Jane grew up in a household that was rife with abuse, and for some reason, Jane was able to not become a victim of abuse herself, but made a strong decision to never have abuse in her own household, to open up her own home to any woman who was being beaten or brutalized or abused in any way. So when she purposely got pregnant at 17, married her husband, John, so she was a young mother, she and John both had made the decision that there would not be abuse in the house because they both grew up with abuse in their house. And she was able to do that. She was diagnosed, first diagnosis of, or let's put it this way, the first suspicion of MS was on her 30th birthday. And that's where this story pretty much opens up. And so she had gone to the doctor because she had all this numbness and she was scared to death. Basically, the doctor told her she'd be dead by the morning if she didn't go to the hospital. She did not go to the hospital. She's one of those women. She's just a warrior in by nature in the sense of having learned to stand up for herself early on in life and always has been able to stand up for herself. So she has a diagnosis of MS several years later. She is hired by Connaught Laboratories, which is in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania, and she worked for them for 10 years. Her diagnosis of MS was later confirmed, and she was being treated for MS not so much with – she did not want to go the traditional route because she saw her mother addicted to tranquilizers having lived in an abusive situation. So she has this real, I don't want to say, but negative feeling toward conventional medicine. So she did certain management of her disease. And so that's where we find Jane in the story, having worked for Knopf for 10 years, having opened up a telemarketing division for the company, a very loyal, hardworking employee who had certain exacerbations of her disease, certain manifestations, and was terminated after just a few mistakes that she made that were later related to not making reasonable accommodations through ADA requires for corporations.
So so her story, it brought you to write this book, Called a Witness. Is there you were just really drawn to this particular story and getting this message out there?
I was drawn to Jane because what really attracted me to Jane and her story was the fact that, you know, Aaron Brockovich, this story is somewhat being compared to Aaron Brockovich. Now, Aaron Brockovich was a person who went out, found, you know, sort of uncovered this injustices, many injustices that were going on that were affecting this community of people. She stood up for those people and worked very hard to get them some sense of justice. Well, nobody really stood up for Jane. Even her lawyer at the time, like most lawyers, wanted her to settle the case. But Jane refused, and she stood alone. She didn't have her husband's support at one point during this whole long process. Because anybody who's been in the legal system knows that when you take a risk like this and it doesn't turn out the way you hope it turns out, I mean, you can be in dire financial straits for the rest of your life. But she just knew. She just had this conviction that what they did was wrong. She wanted to tell the truth, and she wanted to go to trial because she wanted her conviction to be known, and she felt it was wrong. And if any corporation gets away with doing, quote-unquote, is wrong or throwing away their employees, as we call them, throwaway employees, then what's ever going to stop it? Whatever is going to bring attention to it. So I think it was her personal courage and passion and how – I don't know, stronger conviction that she had. And also I had interviewed the lawyer along with Jane and just understood how, because her lawsuit changed the law, it changed or added to, if you will, the definition of ADA to include the inability to make decisions, memory issues, the inability to learn. So it's a pretty complicated but impactful story. And I'm always drawn to stories that empower others.
Yes, and I believe if one story changes one person's life, it's done its work. So this may touch other people who, it doesn't have to be someone who has MS, but who has other aspects that affect them in their workplace, and they may not even understand the laws of the Disability Act, you know. And
right.
So,
I think we tend to think about disabilities as being physical disabilities, mm-hmm. but you know, we're all disabled in some way or other, right? We all have different abilities. Not everybody can do math, but some people can do other things, right? We
yeah.
have learning disabilities. We have emotional disabilities.
Yeah.
I was writing on my blog about, you know, we all suffer some kind of disability. Some of us love too little, you know? So, I mean, you could go a lot of different directions with disability.
So we're going to get into that a little bit more. This is Chris Stainis. You're listening to Voices of Women. When we come back, we'll talk more with Carrie.
Tune into Intuit University, compassionate guidance, connecting you to your inner wisdom with internationally renowned psychic and medium, Sherry Dillard, each Thursday at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern. Get ready for an hour of practical spirituality, fun, and a magic carpet ride into the spirit realm. This hit show is a combination of call-in readings and intuitive mentoring, as Sherry supports, inspires, and empowers you to create your highest good in relationships, career, finances, life purpose, spirituality, and more. For more information, visit SherryDillard.com. Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Laura Longley is on a mission to remove stuckness from your life for good and replace it with happiness. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for The Laura Longley Show, where authentic change takes flight. Say yes to that inspired you and goodbye to your stuckness as Laura and her guests deliver powerful ways to work through common problems in this fun and unique hit show.
Saskia has been helping clients around the world find the North Star in their soul and reinvent their lives through her free breakthrough program, The Secret Soul Map to Your Dreams in 21 Days. If you have a calling but aren't sure how to get there, here's a step-by-step strategy to find your purpose now. You'll learn her proven secrets to achieve your dream in just 21 days. Release your fears and go after your biggest dreams and create the life you love. Visit YourSoulGuidance.com to receive your 21 Secret Soul Map to Your Dreams or to schedule your Soul Breakthrough Session with Saskia or call 978-302-0861. That's 978-302-0861. Or visit YourSoulGuidance.com. That's YourSoulGuidance.com to receive the Secret Soul Map to Your Dreams in 21 days.
Have you ever considered what money and sex have in common? Brenda St. Louis, founder of Know That You Know, explores the energies of debt, money, sex, and our bodies. In her 4-week intensive Debt Into Delight, Getting Intimate with Your Digits, she tickles all those places we don't want to look at, infusing everything with exuberance. Would you be willing to have more money? Would you be willing to have more of you? Explore more of Brenda St. Louis at knowthatyouknow.com.
Women of strength, women of wisdom, women of strength, women of wisdom, women of strength, Women.
So we're back on Voices of Women. This is Chris Danis, and I'm talking with Sherry Blackman, who's the author of Call to Witness. So Sherry, this character, well, she's not a character. She's the main character in the book, but she's a real life person. Jane, am I saying it right? Gagliardo?
Yes, you're saying perfect.
Okay, so I'm not Italian. but she stood alone against a pharmaceutical powerhouse. I mean, talk about being brave. And, you know, and that's why one of the reasons why the lawyer was saying, hey, take this $50,000 they're offering, you know, because it's not an easy thing to stand up against that kind of powerhouse. And so it's a story about the power of one.
It is.
Who could do that. And that's it's, you know, I think that's important for people to remember that, because sometimes we feel so empowered. What can I do all by myself? I'm so small, you know?
Right. Especially because, I mean, you're talking about one of the deepest pockets industries that we have in the world, right? Pharmaceutical company. And I think that's, if you saw Jane and you knew Jane, she stands about 5 feet tall. You know what I mean? She's a non-threatening presence. And the power of one is really important. I mean, if you think about throughout history, it's always been one person who is willing to take it a little bit further, right? One more person who is willing, in some sense, to be the sacrificial lamb, the person who is willing to be the living sacrifice, whether that was Martin Luther King Jr., whomever it was, right? Now, I'm not comparing Jane to Martin Luther Jr., but Martin Luther King Jr., but I am comparing Jane to the fact that, you know, when you're really convinced that you have been wronged, if you're really convinced that you can't stand by and let the company keep doing what they're doing, I mean, that kind of conviction carries you. You know, the sense of truth and justice, you know, carries a person. And you know, I guess you could say gave her the courage to say, you know what, if I have to risk everything, I will. Because it's not just about me, right? It's about all of us. But all of us who are employees, is about all of us who suffer a disability. And the thing about MS, as with many disabilities, it's not always that visible. So,
yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the issue, right? She wasn't necessarily walking with a cane all the time, maybe on occasion. She had terrible muscle spasms, terrible fatigue. She, even her supervisor had asked her about information about MS to understand it. But in the end, never even read the literature that Jane provided for her, which was part of the issue in the lawsuit.
Yeah, and that's that. You know, it really was an eye opener. And I think, you know, I can just picture like these people. Most people, when you're in a corporate, you're all overworked, and so it's like another thing for her supervisor to do to read this information on MS when she's overloaded with work too. And that's no excuse because she's a supervisor, and if it you know, but there's just a lot of eye openers in this. Of it shows people like we have to pay attention.
We do have to pay attention, right? And I've often said that I think her supervisor really embodied the societal attitude that we have about disability, and that mm-hmm. is, I don't want to look at the disabled. I don't want to look at your disability because I don't want to see myself in it. I don't want to be reminded of how frail the human body is. I don't want to be reminded that I could be like you. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be reminded that, you know, I too could have this disease, or I too
yeah.
could be in this situation.
Yeah, there's that avoidance, like, you know, you don't want to look at someone and say, you know, how do we react when we see someone in a wheelchair? You know, we do have reactions.
And we do dehumanize many who have disabilities, and that's been one of my issues with the book, that I really want to bring light to the fact that we do dehumanize those who are not like us or who make us feel uncomfortable or who remind us of what how frail the body and life is itself. I remember I saw this interview with a man that had ended up in a wheelchair, a young man, and he said, you know, you look at me and you see me in a wheelchair, but I am the same person I always was. And that mm-hmm. really kind of struck me about the sense of who we are. Isn't in our physical being.
Yeah.
Are really in our spiritual being and our sense of wholeness. I know people that are physically broken that are some of the most whole people I know. And I know some people who are beautiful and whole and some of the most broken people I know.
So this is why you're saying, like, the book is equally important to both sides of the abled and the disabled, because
exactly.
we can learn from the disabled, their stories. It's and it reminds me, because a couple weeks ago, and I talked about this, I came across Brené Brown's TED Talk on vulnerability. When we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, the world's we allow ourselves to be visible, and the world is more in our really more on our side than when
yes.
we hide our vulnerabilities, because then we're kind of like faking to be strong. You know, we can't let someone see that we're weak because we think being vulnerable is weak. And
Jane's very vulnerable in the story, because she's exposing
yeah.
really, you know, her own family of origin. And
yes.
And, you know, how vulnerable that has made her. But the strength is in sharing that vulnerability, and I think Brené Brown would say the same thing, right? When
right.
we open the door, it's amazing how many people will rush in.
And another thing is that I know in her fight, like even just talking to her husband or lawyer, all I want to do is I just want to work, you know?
Yes.
She that so there's that aspect of the dignity of work for people. And there is that, and she talks a lot about just, you know, for her, it was so embarrassing, so shameful to be fired. And for all of us who have had that experience, I find them very learning experiences. I've had it happen to me when I was young, and I would take that as a learning experience. But for someone who was so, she was so dedicated to this job and loved it and did not, you know, she wanted to work there, even after she was fired, you know. And part of her, I got the feeling like she would have taken the job back. But I think after so many years, I mean, this struggle went on for years. It was settled in 2002, but she got fired in 1996.
Right. And she went to court in 2000. And then when they, you know, appealed the decision, it was finalized in 2002. And I think that point about all I want to do is work, she has said that to me so many times. And I think, you know, really work is about the way we are part of the human family. You know, it's a way that we achieve fulfillment. It's an obligation. You know, and I think without work, and I think this is where disability really becomes a big issue. If the disabled are not allowed to work, or they can't work because they can only make a certain amount of money or whatever, I mean, there's sort of like, I don't know, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? In a way, because so many disabled people can work and want to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, you know, we were made to be workers. And if we don't have a sense of work, especially a sense of that, you know, we are contributing to society, that we are contributing to our families, that we have some sense of independence, that we participate in the world this way, I think that disability has a tremendous impact on us personally and on us as a society.
Yes, and it's how we value ourselves.
It is,
I mean,
and how
not
others value us too, right?
Yeah, well, to not to be able to contribute to society. I mean, we place a lot of value on that, and there is that desire to. It's not just giving back to society; it's feeling fulfilled in our life.
Absolutely.
And feeling. And I was talking about the, you know, I think this Disability Act, or I forget the name of what it's called, but I was at my post office a few weeks ago, and I'm not sure, he must have been deaf, but there's the postal worker deaf, and he just had a little slate, and he wrote, it was really fun. He wrote what he had to say on a whiteboard, and mm-hmm. he would put on the cot, you know, which cost you want, and it was perfectly easy to interact with him and do the business.
Hmm. So you also had to write on the board, or he could lip read?
No, he knew what I was saying.
Hmm.
He couldn't talk, so I'm not sure the whole disability, but it was a very interesting, you know, and I loved it. It was a very interesting experience, and the fact that the post office, you know, could, all they had to do was provide him with a whiteboard.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting? It's sort of that story, you know, being read right in front of you about how we have dehumanized, and just by him being here and being able to interact, in some sense takes away our initial, often unconscious reaction to dehumanize others or to ignore or don't see, you know, make them in the invisible part.
Yeah.
And you know, we always fear what we don't know, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's the other part of it.
Yes. Well, you talked about her strengths. It seems like, although, you know, having gone through that whole process for 6 years or so, at any, it doesn't really go into at it. Doesn't seem like at any point she gave up. She was, you know, totally convinced this is, but it couldn't have been easy.
No. No, and as any lawsuit, right, it takes a long time for it to happen. And meanwhile, your lawyer is racking up hours, right, thousands and thousands of dollars. They had to stay in a camper that her brother provided because they couldn't even afford to stay in a hotel when they went for the trial in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And, you know, she and her husband kept saying, you know, if we only win a dollar, we'll be okay, because then the lawyer has to be paid by the other side. But if we lose, I mean, they would have been in financial ruin for the rest of their lives, probably. So that
yes.
kind of determination, it's almost like she knew. She would say often, mm-hmm. I know that if I get in front of a jury, they will understand what I'm saying. I know it. She was right.
Yeah, yeah. And I think because there was so much truth of what she was saying. You know, there was no hiding. There was no ulterior motive. It was very truthful and impactful. And you know, it's interesting to me was that, you know, the errors that she made. Well, you know, you can get fired for making mistakes, but what came out on the trial is like really how few there were, but also the fact they didn't provide training.
Right. Right. And the thing, the big issue that Jane had was that she was overwhelmed with these military orders. And don't forget, in the time frame that she was working, we militarily in the United States, we were involved in a lot of different places, like we always have, but we had, you know, Operation Desert Storm And so she had these military orders. That was becoming a greater part of the business. It was taking up a deal of her day. And she asked repeatedly, please, I cannot handle these orders. Please
yeah.
give them away. And when they finally gave them away divided them up between three people, and they fired her like a week or two later.
Yeah, yeah. It's frustrating because it's like dealing with you're not dealing with people. You're dealing with a corporate mindset that just seems very rigid. Well, this is Chris Stainis. You're listening to Voices of Women. When we come back, we'll explore more with Sherry Blackman.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life, too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Hi, I'm Michelle Bond. I'm the Vedic astrologer who shines a light on what you put into your body. Sugar is getting a bad rap these days, being linked to causing diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and cancers. A big culprit is a soda we drink, which has 16 teaspoons of sugar in a 20-ounce glass. Diet drinks, while low in sugar, have aspartame, which is a toxin the body breaks down into formaldehyde. And formaldehyde is used in embalming people, and it causes cancer. So instead, drink organic kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A. It is good for you, and depending on how it is sweetened, will only have 2 to 8 teaspoons of sugar in a 20-ounce glass, and is naturally carbonated, so you will get your fizzy fix. For more information and to experience an aha moment, join me on my show, The Michelle Bond Show, Awaken to a New Reality, every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Or go to my website, themichellebondshow.com.
Tune in to Peace World Radio. Vibrant conversations to change the world with Christina Jantz each second Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com and KKNW. This hit show is energetic, vibrant, and an engaging forum that's getting people talking. Christina brings you extraordinary and courageous people, bold in thought and action, who dare to dream that things can be different. Peace World Radio. Join the talk the world is having.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Women of wisdom. Women of wisdom.
Back on Voices of Women, this is Chris Stainis, and I'm talking with Sherry Blackman, who's the author of Call to Witness. And I just wanted to point out that they are giving away three books today. So if you are called to have an inspiring book about standing up for yourself, call 1-800-930-2819. 800-930-2819. And Sherry, why don't you give your contact information, your website, where people can find your book and all that?
You can actually go on the website, calltowitness.com, and they can read an ongoing blog of not only by myself, but also by Jane, the main character, and Patrick Riley, who talks about legal implications on many facets, but has begun to talk about Americans with Disabilities Act on that website. They can find the book on Amazon. It will be a Kindle as well as a paperback edition, hopefully by next week, by the end of this week. And, so that's pretty much where they can find out information and get the conversation going and ask the lawyer questions, have a conversation with Jane directly. So we're hoping that the website will be a great instrument to encourage the conversation.
And, and probably a place for others who have disabilities that get advice or just share their story, too, and their experiences, because we all learn from each other's experiences. So that's great. Well, would you like to talk about, particularly in Jane's case, how a multiple sclerosis manifested itself?
Sure. And I think that's part of the mystery of the disease. Multiple sclerosis, initially when she woke up that first morning on her 30th birthday, she had no feeling. She often said to me, let me give you the best definition of what it feels like to have multiple sclerosis. She said, if I put my hand into a pocket loaded with razor blades, I wouldn't know it until I pulled my hand out and saw the blood. I've heard others talk about multiple sclerosis as far as when they walk, it's like walking on balloons. So multiple sclerosis is a chronic autoimmune disorder that affects movement, sensation, bodily function. It's caused by the destruction of the myelin insulation covering nerve fibers and the central nervous system. So, it's involving the brain and the spinal cord. For Jane, the greatest symptoms, especially during the time of this situation, was that she would have sometimes difficulty walking, sometimes she could have slurred speech. Memory and concentration were the biggest issues that she had. The numbness in her hands and feet continues. I mean, that's sort of an ongoing thing. But it manifests itself sometimes, like if you're under stress, and particularly for her and for others, that's when it will become more visible. So stress is a big part of controlling disease, managing the disease, or exacerbating the disease. So it's one of those diseases that can be invisible to others. There's different types of MS. There's no one understanding of exactly how it would manifest itself in others. And I think that was part of the difficulty because, you wouldn't necessarily know. If she sat in this room today and was having a conversation with us, you might not know that she had this disease.
Mm-hmm. And I know several people here in Seattle. In fact, Seattle has a large incident of MS.
Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know why, but it's just real curious. It makes you wonder, is it the air we're breathing? Is it the water? But
well, those are all questions that we're always going to ask.
Yeah.
Because ALS, similar to MS, is terribly on the rise. So it really does beg a lot of questions.
Yeah, and we can make assumptions like, I mean, I just go to, well, it's all the chemicals that we're being bombarded with in our life, in our food, and the pollution in the air, and all that. And it's, I'm sure it's complex. But so in this book, you also, because she's working in the pharmaceutical arena, there's lots in there of things that she was discovering about that industry and that particular company. And yet, that's another battle, you know, to fight too, that she didn't, it wasn't hers to fight, but.
Well, here's the thing, right? This company had once been the location for Jonas Salk's experiments and development of polio vaccine. Prior to that, I mean, this company, I should say the location in Swift Water, Pennsylvania, goes way back. The history of vaccination production is and has continued to be absolutely fascinating to me, because I grew up in an era where they would scratch our arms, right, with the smallpox or whatever vaccine. Mm-hmm. And when I was learning about the company and its history and how they made vaccines, I think most of us have no idea of what goes into that. And so I find that really fascinating. But there's always legend and folklore around a company like this. And there is a point in the story where Jane and one of her coworkers goes across the street to a famous, no longer there, place called Swiftwater Inn. Talks about the history of the area and, you know, how the locals would talk about things that they would pull from the pond, like three-eyed frogs and, you know, all kinds of things. One of the original spots where Jonas Salk did his experiments, there's now a store there, has been featured on many places. And they said when they were digging up for the parking lot that they dug up all kinds of skeletons, horse skeletons, monkey skeletons, everything else. And if you do the research, you'll know, right, that they bled horses for the serum for making tetanus. I mean, it's just really fascinating. The whole vaccine production industry is just fascinating to me, the history of it, especially when you get down to when you talk about smallpox, because that became there was renewed interest in smallpox after with the war, right? We talked about anthrax, and they were worried about smallpox and terrorism, et cetera, like that. So I think that the company itself, like any pharmaceutical company, has very high standards. But most of us don't really know, and really what goes into the industry, what goes into making our vaccines. And there's a point in the story where, especially this company is known for making flu vaccines, and so they grow the vaccine on eggs. I guess that's how you say it. I shouldn't say grow the vaccine, but they use eggs for the production of the vaccine, flu vaccine. And one day they had a bad batch of eggs, and as they were burning the eggs, all the paint of the on the cars dissolved.
Yeah, from the ash that was falling
down. Yeah, the sulfur ash. So, it's just kind of like amazing when you think about what goes into it.
Yeah, everything. Well, in smallpox, having the vaccinations save, how many lives did that save and protect and all that? And yet, and then you weigh that against the cost of that.
Right. I'm all for vaccines.
Complex.
But I found that, I don't know if this is the right place to talk about it, but originally the smallpox vaccine, how they created a vaccine, it's fascinating. They used to take the bellies of calves, right, and they used to scarify it with the smallpox virus. And then 5 to 7 days later, they would scrape off the scabs. They would grind it with a small amount of dilutant. They would seal them in these glass tubes or on dried ivory points, and then they would scrape a person's skin with them, and that was supposed to help, that was sort of your immunization against against smallpox. Yes, was it effective? Yes, but because of the difficulty in sterile conditions with the calves, it became another issue. But sometimes I think about how they made vaccines, and I think, who comes up with these ideas? It's just fascinating to me, You're going to use scabs of calves. And you're talking long time ago, right? You're talking, late 1700s and 1800s. But I just find the whole vaccine production industry fascinating. As we know, it's also been controversial, and we all know about a lot of that stuff as well.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to question certain things, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know some people don't believe in having vaccinations and fight that of they don't want it for their children, and there are risks. There's always the
And I don't know the percent. I don't think it's a large percentage, but a problem. So,
well, there was that false. Well, I shouldn't say false, but there was that concern after the medical report that they were associating autism with vaccines,
right?
With an aerosol, et cetera. So I understand people's fear. In the 1980s, there was a big controversy over a TV show on DPT and causing encephalitis and on the brain, and it created a whole controversy. And the book actually mentions a little bit about that and how that changed the face of vaccines and the industry and what people were allowed to sue for and what they weren't allowed to sue for. So, you know, I understand that apprehension myself, and my children are a little bit older. They had, 10 vaccines in the first couple of years of their life? Today they have many more than that, children do.
So, oh, really? I didn't know it was that many.
Oh, yeah. I think my friend told me that his son, when he was born about 10 years ago, had 22 vaccines the first year of his life.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's definitely, vaccines save lives, and we know that they do. But it's also scary because it's a little bit of the unknown, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even... What I found really fascinating, like the polio vaccine, right? Big deal in the 1950s. The polio vaccine contained a continuous line of monkey kidney cells. Now, you think about all the stuff that goes into making vaccine, and it's really wondrous science. It's a little scary, too, because we don't know, right, in our lifetimes, how that might manifest itself in our lives. But that's a question we've been asking, all of us have been asking for a long time.
Yes, and it's one of those things that, you know, time will tell. Well, and when we come back, we're going to talk, I'd like to talk a little bit more how Jane's lawsuit changed the law on the disability, American Disability Act. We want to go into that. And so this is Christina's on Voices of Women. And when we return, we'll continue this interesting discussion with Sherry Blackman.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Having trouble keeping up with the accelerated, life-altering changes occurring on the planet? The Quantum Vortex is the brainchild of Meg Benedicte, a pioneer in quantum healing and energetic activations. Weaving together ancient spiritual knowledge, quantum physics, and vibrational healing, Meg Benedicte is accelerating change at the cellular level. For more details on private sessions, meditation CDs, downloads, and teleseminars, visit NewEarthCentral.com.
Tune in each Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com for The Awakening Radio with Patricia. This hit show awakens your dormant, divine, feminine energy. The Awakening Show is the next step on your evolutionary journey through life. Get ready to awaken the dormant seedings within you, your soul's encodement, power, and purpose, and bring this forward with confidence and clarity through the power of your own voice. This show promises to boldly go where you've been before. You just need to remember. Be inspired. Become rewired with The Awakening Radio. Visit awakeningradio.com for weekly topics.
Grateful patients have been saying it for 25 years. When in pain, see Dr. Thane. Dr. Thane of Wellness One of Bellevue has been named one of the nation's top chiropractors by the Consumers Research Council of America, and for good reason. He has helped his patients recover their energy and vitality after car accidents, sports injuries, herniated discs, fatigue due to stress, the list goes on. The website is bellevue.wellnessone.net. When in pain, see Dr. Thane. That's bellevue.wellnessone.net.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Tune in to The Michelle Bond Show. Awaken to a new reality. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. This call-in show with Vedic astrologer, expert, and holistic health practitioner, Michelle Bond, will give you insight to a wide range of topics. This hit show provides healthy, empowering knowledge and information and restores your health and well-being through learning the latest complementary and alternative medicine modalities. Visit themichellebondshow.com.
Women of strength, women of wisdom, women of strength.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Women. This is Chris Danis, and I'm talking with Sherry Blackman, the author of Call to Witness. And I just want to remind people, you can, three people, call in and get this very inspiring book. Just call 800-930-2819. Again, that's 800-930-2819. So, Sherry, we were talking about, kind of got into that whole vaccination discussion, but that's it's kind of a subtopic in the book, because Jane actually, you know, started doing some research, I think, because here was a company that she loved working for, and she was very loyal worker. I mean, she would go in on Christmas Day so that vaccines or whatever medicines were needed to send out to some emergency situation, and just did commendable things and had letters of commendation by her company. And in the end, when being fired, she, you know, just that whole lack of them being loyal to her. And, you know, it makes you think, what does that say about corporate culture? It's just, you know, it's it just seems like it's very one-sided, that we are expected to be loyal, but where's the loyalty back?
Isn't that the truth, right? So, yeah, and I think what's really interesting is, now we're talking many years later, and the corporate culture is still part of her life, in the sense that there are people who will not have book signings for her or are willing to give her publicity out of fear of backlash from the company. People that still work for the company, or, you know, we don't want to do anything that's going to hurt our business. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
As I said before, this is a major, if not the biggest corporation to work for in the area. And I think what's also interesting about corporate culture is, who makes up corporate culture but the people, right? But I think we have seen, especially with the Great Recession, that it seems to me that humanity has been taken out of industry. And it seems to be too much about the bottom dollar, and not enough about the people themselves that make up the corporation or the company. So there's this sort of arrogance and apathy and indifference to the people that create the company, that work for the company, that it's the lifeblood of the company, really.
Yes, and there are starting to be some new companies out there that are doing the opposite, treating their employees fairly and bringing in, alternative ways of management that, and their bottom dollar is also still good, and maybe even better than the old corporate structure. I mean, something needs to shift. We need to start looking at this corporate structure.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree. And I think that if your people are happy and they feel taken care of, and, you know, you're there for them, aren't they going to be there for you?
You would think.
You know, so it's a win-win, right?
Yeah.
You would hope. Yeah. I definitely think with the recession, there has been a little bit of shift in our consciousness about the cost of greed and the cost of profit over, you know, people. So let's hope that's true.
Yeah. Well, I think people are starting to take notice and just, well, I'm aware of women, particularly, I think, leaving corporate structure, corporations, and starting their own businesses. You know, the entrepreneurs that are going out there, it's like, it's starting, you know, it just shows up like, this doesn't work for me anymore. I'll be my own boss.
Right.
And you're seeing more and more of that. And so in order for them to continue, and somewhere down the road, things have to shift. And I mean, it's one of the things that we do at Women of Wisdom and in my own personal business is bringing a new type of leadership forward. And there's a lot of fear and backlash about that, but they need to go move into a new direction. And there's just more and more pointing to people are starting to demand that in one way or another.
Now, you know, speaking about women and to women as well, sometimes I think gender can be a bit of a disability.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's lots of ways of looking at this, you know.
Yeah. Well, women have felt that a long time, having their voices heard.
Yeah.
Or so many women I talk to that work in a larger company, they give up. They don't feel heard, and they just, you know, stop even trying because their way of thinking doesn't fit in. And if the corporation's understood, this is part of the process, like bring the two together, you actually, something greater will come out of it. Well, one of the things I want to ask you about is the lawsuit, how Jane's lawsuit changed the law for the Disability Act.
Jane's lawsuit changed the Americans with Disabilities Act in that it now included that concentration, the ability to make decisions, memory itself were considered major life activities. So when these are impaired, it is now considered a disability. And these were the symptoms, if you will, of her MS. Her inability to focus, her inability to concentrate, her inability to remember, and even the inability to make decisions. Now, clearly, you can see over her past, as you read the book, that had never been an issue before. She was very decisive. She was very grounded. She was very loyal. She was excited about her job. She loved her job. She did everything. She worked two jobs in order to have them have an in-house telemarketing firm. Or in-house telemarketing department. So, you know, clearly these were not part of her way of being prior to when she was being, in her words, micromanaged.
It's a real picture of how bad managers, when they micromanage, you know, the stress it puts people under, that how can they even live up to a performance that they're expected to do?
Yeah, nobody likes to have somebody look over the shoulder. And they had some history prior to working together as well. So there had already been a background of some tension between them. And you know, sometimes we're not as conscious as we need to be of our own motives and ways of being, right? So other things may come out that have nothing to do with work. So
clearly
it was not a good situation.
Right. And you can see how stressed
it too.
Pardon?
I said, and I think her coworkers also understood and saw this kind of, you know, lombing on to Jane, you know, and just interrogate, I don't want to say interrogating her, but through micromanaging, it almost felt like an interrogation every day. And, you know, always worrying about making a mistake and you don't do this right and you don't do this right, that right. And after a while, anybody who's in a situation such as that, whether it's in your home or otherwise, can erode your sense of self-esteem. It can erode your sense of confidence in yourself. And she's quite a confident person. But through this whole experience, as her family testified, you know, she really did lose a part of herself. And she's never been able to really recoup that sense of career and, you know, being a vital part of a company.
Well, I was reading on the back cover of your book that she is now a state-certified counselor for abused women. So she's taking what she's learned, and as you said in the beginning, she grew up in an abusive home. And so, you know, she is, again, standing up for truth and working with people and helping people and being true to herself. And that's what we need to do.
And being vulnerable, too, correct?
Yes.
I mean, so she's there being an advocate. She puts herself in a position of vulnerability, too.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. I invite everybody to check out Sherry's book, Call to Witness. It's just recently published, so look for it in your stores. You can go to your stores and ask for it if they don't have it. You can go to, of course, Amazon, and you can go to Sherry's website, which is calltowitness.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, great. So I want to leave everyone with this thought today. What do you need to stand up for? Think of the power of one, what you could do to make a positive change in your life and others.
So I want to remind people, you can sign up for the Women of Wisdom newsletter. Just go to www.womenofwisdom.org and find out about our monthly events. If you're in Seattle, we're having a quarterly dinner. I'm also the author of the Amazon best-selling and award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. And if you have friends who need some inspiration in your life, this book has also touched many people in their exploration of the divine feminine. You can purchase that on our website, womenofwisdom.org, and it benefits Women of Wisdom. So this is Christina. I'm so glad to have shared this hour with you on Voices of Women. I wish everyone a great weekend.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.
Ugh, aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe?
Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat?
Dr. Pat.
How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. Where's it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the Internet everywhere. Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great! We should spread the word!
Absolutely. Spread the word. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that.
Love is officially in the air. Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show is showing you love all year long, not just for Valentine's Day. Dr. Pat, known for her Pay It Forward manifesto, is now joined by the hosts on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm in love, baby, with Transformation Talk Radio. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com. Amazing host, incredible guest. Get your groove on. Feel the love, be the love.
Can't get enough of your love, pain. Lord, some things I can't get used to.
Stop. Get out of that car. Stop living your life in the passenger seat. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com and let us help you drive.
Transforming the world.